Okay, good morning. We're going to get started. Welcome to the California Coastal Commission. I'm going to give 1 second here to, I see two commissioners coming in. Okay, so Vanessa, let's call the roll.
Commissioner Amenzada.
Here.
Commissioner Brownsey.
Present.
Commissioner Gibson.
Here.
Commissioner Groom.
Present.
Commissioner Howell.
I'm here.
Commissioner Luevano.
Here.
Commissioner Padilla.
Present.
Commissioner Peskin.
Present.
Commissioner Sundberg.
Here.
Commissioner Turnbull Sanders.
Present.
Commissioner Uranga.
Presente.
Chair Bochco.
Present.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. And we'll go through our agenda changes.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. Before we get started, I do want to ask anybody in the audience who plans to speak to the commission today to fill out a speaker slip and turn that into a staff member. We also ask that you silence your cell phones while in the meeting room so that you don't disturb the meeting. As far as agenda changes, we have item 10A, which is application 518821, Foster, West Coast Turf in Newport Beach. That is postponed. Item 10B, application 517140, Orange County Parks District. That matter's postponed. Item 14B, which is the County of San Diego LCP Amendment Certification Review, that's postponed. Item 16B, which is application 618276, Sandalie Hill Lagoon Conservancy in Solana Beach, that staff's recommending get moved to consent. Item 16C, that's application 618, 689, the Haas application, we're recommending that matter be moved to consent. And then item 25A, which is application 316446, Rockview Seawall in Santa Cruz, that matter is postponed. And before we move into public comment, I believe our chief counsel needs to report out from last night.
That's correct. I'm sorry. Yes.
Thank you very much. At the end of the day yesterday, the commission met in closed session. It received litigation information and advice regarding the following cases: Beach and Bluff Conservancy v. City of Solana Beach, Casablanca Beach Estate Owners Association v. County of Santa Barbara, Dunes Development LLC v. Coastal Commission, Friends of the Canyon v. Coastal Commission, Fudge v. Coastal Commission, Green v. Coastal Commission, Mission Beach Citizens for Responsible Development v. Coastal Commission, People of the State of California versus the U.S. Departments of the Interior, Pappas v. State Coastal Conservancy, Spotlight on Coastal Corruption v. Kinsey, Stanger v. Coastal Corruption, and one matter of potential litigation. In addition, the Commission received information and advice and provided direction regarding another case named Dunes Development LLC v. Coastal Commission, Longy v. Coastal Commission, Spotlight on Coastal Corruption v. Coastal Commission, and one matter of potential litigation. That concludes my report. Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, then we'll start our public comment. Chris, do we need to say a closed session will be at the end of today's meeting? Do you want to announce that now or later? Now?
We certainly may have a closed session at the end of the meeting.
Okay, yes. Good. All right. So I'll call each speaker that I have a slip for. You'll each have up to 3 minutes to speak. State your name clearly for the record, please, starting with Bill McLaughlin.
Okay, no sweat. My name is Bill McLaughlin. I am a local surfer fisherman and an activist with the Surfrider Foundation San Francisco chapter. I lead the Restore Slope campaign here at Ocean Beach in San Francisco. It's at the very southern end of the beach, right in front of the San Francisco Zoo. We have a picture up there. We have an erosion issue, and our chapter has been working on a two-decade-long campaign to clean up the rock and rubble riprap that's being used as erosion control and to get a full beach restoration project going. Last spring, the commission sponsored a local coastal plan amendment that will lead to a long-term erosion strategy that will include full beach restoration. We're really happy about that. The initial phase of this plan is about to begin. It's about to begin breaking ground, and the first element will be the realignment of the road away from the water, relocation, managed retreat of the coastal section of the Great Highway. You can see that road right there. It's eroding, and the first phase will move it away from the water, which is totally appropriate. While we applaud this move, Surfrider's here to register concern about the need for beach parking in the area. Here is a little snapshot of what's going on a nice sunny day in the erosion hazard area. People are parking all over the place. They're parking on the side of the bluff that's eroding. They're parking in the median. They're darting across traffic. The situation is chaotic and unsafe. And we used to have 200 spaces of parking down in this area. We only have 29 spaces left due to the erosion. So we're here to urge the Coastal Commission to work with the city as soon as possible to address parking needs, particularly with this road realignment project that's coming up. This is mainly for the North Central Coast District staff, but I just wanted to put it on the radar and make it an official part of the comment. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Barbara Levin or Laveau.
Good morning. I'm Barbara Levay.
Thank you.
I live in Monterra, just down the coast, and thank you for letting me speak this morning. I am here to speak on behalf of SAMCAR, Samtale County Association of Realtors. I'm the chair of the Coastside Ledge Committee, or Government Affairs Committee, and I'm here to speak about the Residential Adaptation Policy Guidance. The California Coastal Commission has written a 95-page document that they entitled the Residential Adaptation Policy Guidance, RAPG for short. It's a series of policies dealing with the sea level rise that will lead local jurisdictions in choosing which ordinances to pass with respect to the future use of homes on the coast. There are, however, serious concerns with aspects of the RAPG that would prematurely and unnecessarily devalue, restrict, and condemn properties on the coast. I have two issues that I'd like to bring to your attention today. One is that we feel as though there was insufficient public input, and two, that the fact that the RAPG only addresses residential structures in a world where residential, commercial, and public works are inseparable. First, with the RAPG document itself, there were references to maximum public input, yet extraordinarily little input has actually taken place. Prior to adoption, the CCC should notify all the residents within its jurisdiction by mail about the RAPG and provide the website where that 95-page document could be viewed by the public. I've read that document, and it's really confusing. I'm a realtor. I've been a realtor since 2000, and it's thick. It's dense. It's hard for me to understand it. I don't understand how the residents will understand, so more time, hopefully, will be given to this. Prior to finalizing the document, that the CCC should send the RAPG to the cities and the counties and ask them each to hold a minimum of 2 public hearings with public comment on that RAPG. Lastly, a concern that we have is that the RAPG is being written in a vacuum without the corresponding commercial and public works guidance documents. For the purpose of land use and planning, the three pieces, commercial, residential, and public, are inseparable. For instance, in Princeton Harbor, where I lived for over 10 years, there are a few little cottages. I lived in a little cottage that was built like the turn of the century. But now there are plenty of homes, residences that are, one just sold for $2 million right on the beach. Aside, right next to that is a commercial building. So we're, our concern is that this address is only residential and not commercial. Am I over? Okay. Well, thank you very much. I'd like for those things to be considered.
Thank you. Eileen O'Reilly.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Eileen O'Reilly. I'm a resident of Pacifica, California, and also a realtor. I'm here also representing the San Mateo County Association of Realtors. And basically, with regards to sea level rise, we are going through our local coastal plan update in Pacifica. I'm actually a member of the working group itself. And as a realtor, I'm looking at it from a homeowner's perspective. One of the things that I have some issues with is exactly the residential adaptation policy of 95 pages. There's some ambiguity, and it's confusing for people to really understand, specifically as far as like existing structures and development as of January 1st, 1977. Are you looking at the value of the property in current day, current time? Are you looking at local, you know, current value as it is for market value? Are you looking at the assessed value? So I think it's very confusing for people to know how their property is going to be affected by that, how much money is going to be allowed to be spent on a property to make upgrades or to make changes. So that is, I would like for more information to be put out about that specifically. And then also just requesting that the CCC require some more public meetings with a public comment period in every jurisdiction. So we have had some meetings, but most of the people in Pacifica did not know about the local coastal plan update. It has been very contentious back and forth, and we just appreciate a little bit more information from CCC. Thank you.
Thank you. Cindy Blankenberg.
Hi, thank you. My name's Cindy Blankenberg. I'm a past president of the Pismo Coast Association of Realtors, and I'm also here to talk about the sea level rise. And first of all, I wanted to thank you for the reception last night. It was in a beautiful location, and it was nice to have a few minutes to talk with people individually. The Pismo Coast Association of Realtors believes it is very important to protect our beautiful coastline while also protecting private property rights. Historically, realtors have been involved in disclosing conditions that exist on certain properties, which raises concerns about some of the provisions in the draft document. For instance, mapping coastal hazards. Property owners need a logical, functional way to determine if they are subject to current or future hazards on their specific parcel. Property owners should be able to search by address and parcel number and receive site-specific information about potential future coastal hazards. Another issue is the real estate disclosure. Requiring real estate disclosures of all coastal hazards would be virtually impossible for property owners. The only entity that could and should provide this is the regional government that wants the disclosures made. And third, the sea level rise overlay zones. It would be reasonable to handle this in the same way that flooding and earthquake zones are handled. Flooding and earthquake zones are determined specifically by assessing certain hazards for vulnerability, etc. After such somewhat exhaustive studies and analysis have been conducted, only then are flood and earthquake hazard zones identified. The same methodology needs to be used for coastal hazards, with the ability to access the information by address and parcel number. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Nancy Cave. Nice to see you in front of the podium.
I don't miss this at all. And I'll do my best to stay at 3. I'm a little over. I apologize. Good morning, Chair Bosco, commissioners, staff, members of the public. My name is Nancy Cave, and I'm here today as a member of the public. I'm also a retired commission employee who worked for you for 40 years. ending as a district manager for the North Central District. As such, I'm uniquely qualified to address you on the topic of staff retention. To retain staff, you need to raise their salaries. The commission does not pay enough. Your current strategic plan expires this year. I understand you are updating that plan. I call your attention to goal number 7.76, pursue structural salary increases for coastal program analysts and other classifications. This goal has not been met in the current plan, and it should be moved to the top of the list for the new plan. You will not be able to make progress on any of the other plan's important policy goals without retaining a qualified staff. In 2014, the Commission paid a consulting firm to assess the job responsibilities of its staff and to compare their salary levels to their counterparts in local government. That report found the Commission staff is grossly underpaid when compared to local government, with the most egregious disparities found at the entry level for supervisorial and management. In order to better their earning power so they can settle down, start relationships in their lives, staff must leave because they cannot support families on these salary levels without severe hardship. I know this from personal experience. Your starting pay for a Coastal Program Analyst 1 ranges between $3,500 to $5,400 a month. A one-bedroom apartment in San Francisco goes for $3,000 a month right now. I know this because I helped my cousin just rent one this last month. A three-bedroom apartment, which a family needs, goes for $4,200 to $6,000 a month. Our managers make between $6,200 and $7,700 a month. They would be paying all their money towards housing, and I know this because I've paid a lot of my money towards housing. They cannot afford to stay at the commission if they have to have a home, if they want to have a home and a family. San Francisco pays their planner fours, equivalent of your managers, possibly, $9,700 to $12,000 a month. It's easy to see why staff leaves to better compensation at local government levels to the detriment of this commission. So now is the time to advocate for your staff. Your help is needed in Sacramento as state contract negotiations get underway for new contracts in 2020. Make increases in pay a bargaining issue in all of the new contracts. You have the 2014 report. Start meeting with the Department of Personnel Administration staff and the union to get commitment for an inequity increase in every classification you can. Advocate for a geographic pay increase for the state's high cost of living areas, which are all the coastal areas where all your offices are located. Read the 2014 report and talk to your staff for more on this. Most importantly, make this a top priority for the next year. For the past year, I've watched my successors struggle. I want them to stay and do the good work and continue the legacy that I and others in the gray wave have left. I don't want that legacy wasted, and thank you for the extra time.
Silver wave.
Silver thank face. You. That's right. The silver foxes. Okay. Commissioner, Vice Chair Turnbull Sanders, I'm sorry.
Nancy, thank you for making that so plain for us all. It really is something that we have been struggling with for many years. But was wondering, would you be able to make your comments in writing and submit to us? Even if they're rough, be great.
I'd be happy to. I've just got to type them up, and I could give you the figures I cited as well. And I urge you to read that 2014 report. I mean, we put a lot of time into that. I bargained the last inequity for the commission and analysts in 1990. My son's 28 now. That's a little bit too long.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good to see you back. Sharon Honeyman.
Hi, thank you for hearing me. I am Sharan Honeyman. I am a realtor in Half Moon Bay, and I also live on the west side of Highway 1 and own a home there. And I do have a concern with the RAPG. The fundamental concern that I have is the underlying presumption that the restricting of private property rights automatically takes precedence over property owners' rights, quite owner's quiet enjoyment of his or her home. A property owner should have the right to enjoy his or her property until such a point that the CCC can establish that restrictions are reasonable and necessary to protect the public's immediate interest. The government agency taking the property or restricting the property's use should have the burden of proof that taking of property, private property, is necessary at the time. Limitations should not be placed on property owners, and homes should not be condemned on the basis of what might happen in 100 years, 50 years, or even 30 years. Parts of the RAPG unnecessarily restrict the rights of property owners with no tangible benefit to the public. There is no public gain from prohibiting, restricting, and disincentivizing homeowners from adding a bedroom or remodeling their kitchen. As long as the homeowner is aware that he or she cannot utilize public funds in the event of a property loss due to climate change, and there is no adverse social or environmental impact, he or she should be allowed to expand, modify, or improve their home. The same applies to lot line adjustments. As long as there are no adverse impacts, property owners should be allowed to continue to adjust their lot lines with neighboring properties. Where sea level rise is concerned, the size and age of a structure is irrelevant. Restrictions of this nature are unnecessary, arbitrary, and should be removed from the RAPG. Thank you.
Thank you. Molly Whip.
Good morning. My name is Molly Whip. I'm a real estate agent. I live in Pescadero, California. I'm here on behalf of SAMCAR. We are respectfully requesting that the California Coastal Commission ask that public meetings are held with a public comment period in every jurisdiction that has a local coastal program, and that the feedback that comes from those meetings is included in the residential adaptation policy guidance prior to its finalization. The residential adaptation policy guidance itself 15 times mentions that the maximum public input is essential to the success of the RAPG. Yet, extraordinarily little public input has taken place. A couple of webinars and two written public comment periods to the drafts of a 95-page, highly technical document that only a handful of people have read does not come close to representing maximum public input. Critical participants in the sale, insurance, financing, and title of homes have not been included in the conversation. Without input from these industries, there will be some serious consequences to the homeowners. The sizable loss in property value from the sample policies in the RAPG being adopted and local LCPs could have catastrophic impact on a city's ability to issue municipal bonds. Thank you.
Thank you. Kevin Casey is our last speaker.
Good morning, Kevin Casey. Thank you for being here. I am a Pacifica resident, but I'm here representing California Association of Mortgage Professionals. I am on the state board. I want to just bring in, kind of emphasize what the previous speaker just mentioned about expanding your research before you implement any rules on that would affect property rights. The best example I can give you is in the mortgage world. Once there's a disaster or anything that affects property values, everything shuts down. And the best example I have is in the Napa fires last year in Sonoma. I had a loan I was doing in Petaluma for a client. There was no fires in Petaluma. But the investors shut down all loans dead on the spot, no matter what process you're in, once a disaster's occurred. And if you make anything that affects one house affects the neighborhoods. The case I had where the home obviously was in Petaluma. We had to show the fires were nowhere near Petaluma. Still, the investors were not satisfied with that. We had to show not only was the house still standing, but the entire neighborhood was standing. So if you do a law and pass a law where, you know, even if it's only the homes on the coast, the entire city of Pacifica, in my case, would be affected, and people, you know, across the area would not be able to get loans. So I'm asking you to reach out to the industries. Reach out to the insurance industries, homeowners insurance, because they won't allow homes to be rebuilt. Reach out to the investment communities, the Mortgage Bankers Association, because they are the ones who are going to be buying these mortgages. They're going to keep people from buying homes if there's restrictions placed on them. So what I'm asking you to do is just reach out, go to, you know, the different industries and see how your rules and regulations will affect other areas of property. And thank you. That's all I had.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Commissioner Brown, do you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Jack, perhaps it would be helpful to describe the process that our sea level rise document has gone through thus far, and then I'm going to have a follow-up comment. Thank you very much.
Yes, we started the residential adaptation guidelines process over a year ago. We released it for public comment a year ago, almost exactly today, with a number of outreach events to our local governments, pushing them out to through webinars, informational webinars. We have heavily advertised it on our website and in these commission meetings. We've worked with the League of Cities and CSAC to push out that information to our local governments. In response just recently to some of the concerns raised here today, I decided to hold off on moving forward with the residential adaptation guidelines for additional outreach, but also more importantly, to better describe what is in the residential adaptation guidelines in more simple terms and messaging to our to the public and our local government partners, because the purpose behind these residential guidelines is to provide a set of tools for our local governments to help them prepare to plan for sea level rise and to build resilient communities. It's not to force down on top of our local governments any policy requirements. This provides them a set of tools in order to start that process at the local level. It has to be the vision of the local governments and coming up from the bottom up, a top-down approach where the commission just is pushing down policy on top of our local governments simply will not work. And so I appreciate the comments that are made here today, and we are doing our best here to make it to simplify our message with a public education campaign, particularly with our local, with our agency partners, the OPC, Conservancy, State Lands, and other agencies, in order to provide an understanding of what this is about. My intent behind this is this: as we have all of these, you know, we have 39 grants out to local governments for this specific effort to plan for sea level rise and to plan for resilient communities. And the intent was to provide some guidance and help that was being requested by our local governments. And that was the intent, to provide that assistance. It's not about forcing it down people's throat. I'm a pragmatist. I believe in coming at it from a reasonable approach with reasonable and phased approaches to this slow-moving disaster. And it is. As you see with the science that's rolling out, there was just a report out last week in the a study in Nature from Princeton University and Scripps Institute of Oceanography about our warming seas and 60% increase in warming of seas that we didn't realize was occurring. It's going to happen. It would be irresponsible of us to not plan for this. So I hope I didn't go on.
I do.
That answers your question.
Yes, it did, in fact, answer my question. And so I know that my motive in asking the question was to give some guidance to the people who came here today to express their concerns about the document, to focus their attention on the fact that the document is a tool set where the conversations are going to occur, and we hope that you will direct your energy and your knowledge at the local level, because it is going to be your local community that looks at the constellation of options
and will be developing the rules, the regs, the zoning to address those issues. I was particularly struck by the comments by the gentleman from the mortgage industry because I have been listening and watching this issue around the country. California is not the only coastal state. They are grappling with this in Florida, all up and down the East Coast, and particularly New York, which has New York City has over 300 miles of coastline just for that city. And one of the things that Marco Rubio, not a raving liberal climate supporter, said was, we're going to have to deal with climate regardless, because the insurance industry is going to weigh in if we don't do something, but regardless. So this is, and my point in saying that to all the people who are here is, we think this is one of the absolutely, not only one of the most important issues facing us today, particularly our coastal communities, who we want to remain vibrant and accessible, but it's very complicated. And that's why those conversations have to occur at the local level, because California coastal communities are extremely diverse. What works in Half Moon Bay isn't necessarily going to work in Fort Bragg, California. So I just want to thank everybody for coming today. I hope that you will continue your participation in the process that's going to occur. And I hope that your comments and those of any others in your community have been communicated in writing to the commission, because it's very important that we have a record of people's statements and concerns. So, Madam Chair, thank you very much.
Thank you. Commissioner Groom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for all the San Mateo County residents who have been here today, especially since I represent San Mateo County. I'd like to fill you in a little bit on what we've done in San Mateo County for this. Your Legislative Affairs Director, Gina Azari from SAMCAR, I've hosted two meetings for her, and she invited realtors to come to our office and speak. At one of them, Madeline Cavelli, who was our statewide planner, was present, and they've actually brought up to Madeline the mortgage and lending, and Madeline said that she would start contacting those people and include them in our final document, or at least get their sense of whether our final document was on track or not. For the people from Pacifica, just a month ago, Director Ainsworth and Dan Carl and Janine Mena came up to San Mateo County and met with two of your council members, Mike O'Neill and John Keener, as well as representatives from Kevin Mullen and Jerry Hill's office on this very topic. And again, we would be more than happy to organize or facilitate something like that again to make you really aware of this document. It is an important document. Sea level rise is here and coming, but we want to certainly be part of the solution.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Oh, Commissioner Howell.
Thank you, Chair Boschko. And I, too, appreciate everyone coming to comment on the sea level rise, and I'd like to echo the comments of Commissioner Groom and Brownsley. Can we do a reach out to the Coastal Cities group, perhaps, and they can organize? Maybe we can all go to Pismo Beach and have either a round table or something that could be organized by the League of Cities, if you'd be willing to make yourself available, Executive Director, and some commissioners, and try and like hash this out a little more.
That's already occurring. I've already met with the leadership of that group, and we are arranging that very
Pismo in February.
Not Pismo. As much as I love Pismo Beach, we haven't decided on a venue yet, but that is going to occur. We had a great conversation, and they're all in on, you know, trying to message and develop these guidelines in a way that's practical and reasonable. And we also are including representative from the CSAC, the County Association of Governments, and and including them in this conversation. The other thing that we're planning is a public workshop, local government workshop, like we've done in the past, with the League of Cities, the city representatives, and county representatives, to discuss this very issue outside of a context of an LCP or a permit, but more globally, and how we can approach these really, really difficult issues that we're all struggling with. I just want to say there's no easy answers to these things. We don't have the answers. It's going to take a partnership of all of us to deal with this issue, and we should all come at it in a spirit of humility and compassion and empathy to problem solve and work through it. And to one thing I would hate to have happen is that we demonize one another. The real enemy is this climate change and sea level rise. So that is the spirit in which I'm going to approach this and continue to work with all of our partners and stakeholders. Thank you.
Thank you. And we have everyone's contact information from the Realtors Associations that are here.
You know how to get me.
Thank you.
Certainly. All right. Let's move on then, unless there's no more comments. Good. So we'll move on to item 5.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Item 5 is the administrative calendar for South Coast District, Orange County. There's one routine dock project in Newport Beach. Conditions are acceptable to the applicant. There's no known opposition, so staff recommends the commission concur with the executive director and approve the administrative calendar.
Any objection to approving the administrative calendar? Seeing none, we approve it.
Thank you. Item 6 is the consent calendar for San Diego Coast District. There's one application for a residential project in the San Diego community of Mission Beach. Conditions are acceptable to the applicant. And while there's no Coastal Act-based opposition to the project, staff did receive a letter from a neighbor expressing opposition to the project based on private view concerns. And while public coastal views are a resource protected by the Coastal Act, private views are not. We are addressing the public view protection issues by requiring protection and enhancement of the public view corridor that exists along Niantic Court. In addition, the residence itself is consistent with the height, bulk, and scale of the surrounding development and is consistent with the city's development standards. So staff continues to recommend this matter be approved on the consent calendar.
Any ex partes? Seeing none, do I have a motion?
Second.
Care to speak to your motions? Okay. The makers of the motion are asking for a yes to approve the consent calendar. Seeing no objection, the consent calendar is approved.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Item 7 is the Deputy Director's Report for the South Coast District, Orange County. There are 7 waivers and an immaterial permit amendment being reported. There have been no comments in opposition to any of these items, so staff's recommending the Commission concur with the Executive Director's determination and approve the Deputy Director's Report.
Any ex partes? Seeing none, is there any objection to unanimous concurrence with the Deputy Director's Report? Seeing no objection, we concur.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Item 8 is moving items from regular to consent, which there are none to report today. So that takes us to item 9A, which is a request to extend the 90-day time limit for Commission action on Huntington Beach's LCP amendment to incorporate the Windward specific plan. We are targeting a full hearing on this matter at the next meeting or perhaps the early part of 2019. City's in agreement with the extension, so staff's recommending the Commission extend the 90-day time limit for 1 year.
Do I have a motion?
Madam Chair, move the time limit extension.
Second.
All right. Is any objection to extending the time limit? Seeing none, the motion passes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Items 10A and B are postponed, so that takes us to 11A,
There is a staff presentation on this matter. Also, there is an addendum on this item. So item 11A is a coastal development permit amendment 5231A6 for changes to the Orange County Ocean Outlet Maintenance Program that was approved by the Commission in 2003. This maintenance program involves the outlets for beach outlets on the beach for various county-maintained drainage channels and streams. The maintenance work primarily is the excavation of sand that is settled at the seaward end of the outlets and deposition of that sand on adjacent beaches. The work also includes replacement of rocks dislodged from energy dissipators, floating trash removal, and water quality monitoring. Sand is removed from the outlets to maintain flood capacity, prevent water stagnation, and to restore surface flow. The sand also provides beach nourishment. This is the sixth amendment request from the county. Prior amendments have extended the permit expiration date and removed a few outlets from the maintenance program. The subject amendment would remove another outlet, North Doheny Creek, from the program because it's located in state parks jurisdiction. The amendment also changes the areas where sediment can be excavated and deposited, increases the amount of sediment they can relocate, and expands the time periods they may do the work. The amendment also extends the permit expiration date another 5 to 10 years. The underlying commission-approved permit only applies to the commission's retained jurisdiction areas, which include the work in San Clemente on the beach and on the beach in Newport Beach, and below the mean high tide line in the city of Huntington Beach and Dana Point. This amendment would expand the work areas into the jurisdiction of Huntington Beach and Dana Point. Those cities agreed to the commission processing a consolidated permit for development in their jurisdiction. So when the commission processes a consolidated permit, the standard of review is the Chapter 3 policies of the Coastal Act and the LCP's service guidance. Slide 2. Segunda de Checa Cañada is located in the city of San Clemente, seaward of a Metrolink station and adjacent to a row of residences at North Beach. The county is proposing to continue semi-annual sand excavation and discharge at this location. Excavation volumes are proposed to be increased from about 30 cubic yards to 1,000 cubic yards per maintenance event, with slightly smaller excavation and deposition footprints than was previously approved. Sand would continue to be placed above the mean high tide line. The site is accessed by a gate adjacent to the outlet, and each maintenance event would last about 4 days. Slide 3, please. The Estrella Storm Channel, also called Capistrano Beach Number 2 in the underlying permit, is an outlet in the city of Dana Point that's located seaward of a row of homes on Beach Road along Capistrano Beach. Here the county proposes a one-time replacement of the flap gate, which is shown on the right in the image, and continued semi-annual sand excavation and placement above the mean high tide line. The volume of sand excavated here would remain about the same as was approved in the underlying permit, with slightly smaller excavation and deposition footprints. Staging at this area would be at Capistrano Beach's parking lot, and maintenance events would last about 2 weeks here. Slide 4. Salt Creek Outlet is located adjacent to a private beach club and golf course in the Dana Point area. The county proposes to add an additional fall maintenance event to the proposed events, two events per year. Excavation volumes would increase by about 900 cubic yards with per maintenance event, with slightly smaller, again, deposition and excavation footprints. At this location, the site is proposed to be accessed from Monarch Bay Resort or Monarch Beach Golf Course, with equipment storage in the Monarch Bay parking lot or on the sand above the mean high tide line, if necessary. Each maintenance event here would last about 3 days. The Monarch Bay Club received a permit approved by the Commission in April 2015 to perform smaller sand movement work above the mean high tide line if Salt Creek meanders northward. Special Condition 11 of this permit requires the county to coordinate with the Monarch Bay Club to ensure that cumulative impacts from the two maintenance operations are not incurred. Slide 5. So the northernmost outlets are Talbert Channel and Santa Ana River in the city of Huntington Beach and bordering the city of Newport Beach. Immediately up coast of Talbert Channel is Huntington State Beach with public access ways, shaded picnic tables, and fire pits. In between the Talbert Channel and Santa Ana River outlets is the California Least Churn Natural Preserve, which is fenced off from the public beach. Inland to these sites are various wetlands, including the Brookhurst Marsh, and those located in and around Talbert Regional Park. The area seaward of the Santa Ana River has been used as an unofficial public dog park when substantial sand is accumulated at the outlet mouth. Down coast of the Santa Ana River outlet is Newport Beach, where excavated sediment is proposed to be deposited. At Talbert Channel, which is shown on the left, the county is asking to increase the amount of sand they may excavate from about 7,500 cubic yards per event to 15,000 cubic yards per event. To expand the area where the excavation can occur by slightly less than an acre, but to reduce the area where they would place the sand from about 9 acres to a 3-acre area above the mean high tide line. The site would be accessed from staging area at the northeast corner of the channel, and each maintenance event is expected to last about 2 weeks. The most significant changes included in this amendment are at Santa Ana River location, where the county is proposing to significantly expand the amount of sand they can excavate, as well as expand the areas where they would place that sand. Currently, the county has approval to place 7,300 cubic yards in a 4-acre area next to the river. Under this amendment, the maximum volume would increase to 70,000 cubic yards per maintenance event, with a maximum annual excavation of 200,000 cubic yards per year. The excavated sand would be placed along the length of Newport Beach, extending seaward to mean lower low water line if there's insufficient space above the high tide line. In addition, the county proposes to add a screen plant to filter out any non-compatible beach material and allow up to 5 maintenance events per year, but again, subject to the 200,000 cubic yard cap. As proposed, the excavated and clean sediment from the river would be placed within Newport Beach along the Pacific-facing beaches from the outlet location to the jetty at the eastern end of the Balboa Peninsula. Between the landward line of development and the mean lower low water line, with the exception of dune habitat areas. And a maintenance event at this location could last approximately 9 weeks. Slide 6, please. So the maintenance program is primarily for flood control purposes to prevent the accumulation of sediment at various stream outlets in the county that contributes to water stagnation and related environmental problems. When an outlet's blocked, the inland waters stagnate, they collect trash and debris and become anoxic and warm. These conditions support bacterial growth that can lead to fish kills and adversely affect coastal resources and public health. Thus, through the excavation of sediment and removal of trash from the outlets, the proposed development mitigates water quality impacts by restoring proper flow and tidal influence, thereby reducing the adverse impacts caused by the blockage of the outlets. And while the removal of sand from the outlets will have environmental benefits, the accompanying use of heavy equipment could have impacts on sensitive land and marine resources, including the sand dune habitat, habitat preserves for California least terns and western snowy plovers, California grunion, and intertidal organisms located within and adjacent to the project area. So commission staffs work with the county on protective measures to avoid those sensitive species and habitats, such as having a biological monitor on site during excavation and deposition activities, as well as other measures that protect wrack, limit sand discharges near sensitive habitat, restrict the routes and speed at which maintenance vehicles can drive along the beach, and avoid maintenance operations during the California lease turn and snowy plover nesting and California grunion spawning season. So an access route and sediment discharge plan will also restrict maintenance operations to specific corridors, largely within groomed beach areas, and observe buffers between dune habitat and maintenance work. Slide 7, please. The five subject ocean outlets are located on popular recreational beaches. The proposed maintenance work may temporarily interfere with lateral or vertical access to the shoreline with trucks and equipment. Special conditions are imposed to minimize impacts to public parking and avoid pedestrian and bike routes, and to prevent regular maintenance during peak beach use periods. Also, Newport Beach, which is proposed to receive up to 200,000 cubic yards of sand, has a number of popular surf breaks, including Blackies, the Newport Jetties, and the iconic surf spot, the Wedge. Placing large amounts of sand below the mean high tide line may impact these beach breaks by affecting the sandbars in the surf zone and could adversely impact recreation opportunities. So to address these issues, the permit has been conditioned to monitor the impacts of the sand dispersal on surf breaks where substantial volumes of sand would be deposited below the mean high tide line, and to adapt their activities where impacts are observed. In addition, the counties agreed to restrict their sand placement to portions of the beach northwest of C Street in order to avoid adverse impacts to the Wedge. Slide 7. So in conclusion, staff's recommending the commission approve the permit amendment subject to 12 conditions that are listed on pages 7 through 13 of the staff reports and modified per the addendum, which is dated November 6th. And as conditions, staff concluded the project is consistent with the Coastal Act. And the motion to and resolution are on page 6 of the staff report. That concludes staff's comments.
Okay, thank you. Any ex partes? All right, I have one speaker and one person here available for questions. Mr. Matthews from the county is here for questions, and Mark Massara, if he would like to speak.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioners. I'm Mark Massara, and I'm just listening to this plan by Orange County to increase dredging at the Santa Ana River mouth, and it strikes me that the elephant in the room is the county's use of the adjacent Esha as a long-running, illegal, unpermitted, uncontrolled dog park. I know of no other Esha in California that is actively encouraged by local government to be damaged and destroyed like this. You know from years of reports now that this situation will not be resolved without your input. And it strikes me that this is the ideal time for you to speak up and demand that the county, as part of this permit, take immediate steps to disown its informal dog park and begin to enforce protection of Esha at the Santa Ana River mouth. Thank you.
Thank you. Staff, would you like to comment? Oh, I'm sorry. I don't have your little speaker set.
I'll do it retroactive.
That's all right. Jennifer Savage.
Thank you. Jennifer Savage, Surfrider Foundation. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on Orange County's proposal to amend the Ocean Outlet Maintenance Manual. The Surfrider Foundation Newport Beach chapter supports keeping the county's channels at design depths. One notable change in the manual is increase from 7,500 cubic yards to 70,000 cubic yards of sediment excavation at the Santa Ana River and placement on Newport Beach seaward of the mean low water line. Surfrider is concerned about the impacts to surf resources with the deposition of sediment onto Newport Beach, and as such, we greatly appreciate the inclusion of surf monitoring as a special condition to this permit. Surfing is obviously a highly valuable resource, especially in this portion of Southern California, where several standout world-class waves exist, as staff noted. Staff's proposed condition for surf monitoring includes a requirement for baseline monitoring of surf conditions 3 times a week for 1 month prior to sediment deposition and monitoring of surf conditions for 8 weeks after the sediment is placed. While we appreciate the consideration, such short baseline monitoring and post-deposition monitoring is inadequate and could be essentially meaningless given the variability in oceanic conditions, especially across seasons. A prior commission-approved permits have required surf monitoring data collection over a much longer length of time. The surf monitoring program conducted by San Leo Lagoon Conservancy collected data twice a week for 6 months. Additionally, the surf monitoring program in San Diego County feature comparable sediment deposits at several locations, and baseline monitoring was conducted for approximately 7 months. And after it was deposited, it was conducted for about a year. The impacts to surfing at Imperial Beach from the RBSP2 project were purported to have lasted for 3.5 months. So all this is to say that we believe the impacts are potentially going to last a lot longer. Sand quantities of the proposed amount can impact sand transport and beach profiles, which may in turn impact recreation and coastal habitats. The impacts of any sand placed on the shoreline environment must be thoroughly studied and monitored. This will ensure recourse in case of negative impacts. We strongly urge the Commission to adopt longer monitoring duration requirements in Special Condition 4. Ideally, baseline monitoring should be implemented for a year or more prior to any beach fill to provide an adequate baseline of surfing conditions at surf spots within the project area and extended for a year after. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. Bring it back to staff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the county Santa Ana River outlet, the dog park issue, we are working on that through our enforcement staff. But also this proposed project does involve excavation of the sand from that outlet that is sort of enabling it to be used as a dog park. So once you remove that sand, water will flow more continuously over the area, and we expect that use would be less desirable. And as far as the extending the baseline monitoring, our staff did work with Leslie Ewing on the conditions. Given the scope of what's being proposed here, we didn't think that length of monitoring would be necessarily required. On the other hand, I don't know that staff's opposed, but I would want to hear from the county, who does have a representative here today, to find out if this request is something that would be practical or not, or even feasible. So,
Would you like Mr. Matthews to come forward from the county?
Yes, yeah. Please.
If you'll just state your full name.
Good morning. I'm Giles Matthews. I'm the biologist with Orange County Public Works.
Oh. So did you hear what he asked, or do you want to hear him say it again?
Yeah. So in terms of frequency of monitoring, in terms of frequency of monitoring, this is the point you're looking to get an answer from?
Yeah, this would be the baseline monitoring for the surf monitoring. If I understand things correctly, Surf Rider is asking for the period of time that the monitoring would occur be extended out to 2 times a week for a period of 6 months.
Okay, so generally our work is maintenance, so it's going to mainly be small amounts over what we're looking for is an increased number of maintenance periods, particularly at Santa Ana River, but generally it's going to be quite small amounts, but we want to be able to take large amounts if we need to. So the permit that we discussed with Carl was about, on those small events, it's going to be a small amount spread over distances, so the impacts to surfing should be negligible. One of the conditions where we have larger amounts, where we have, a big storm event brings lots of sand in, we will do surf monitoring for that. We have done a very large sediment removal project 2 years ago, and we did extensive surf monitoring for that, and we basically found no impact to the surf break there. So we don't feel that it's warranted to extend that beyond the period that's been suggested in the conditions. We're happy to abide by all those conditions, but it is a maintenance project, and it was surf monitoring event costs around $30,000. So if we have to do that, that's for 4 weeks before and 8 weeks afterwards. If we have to extend that for a year, that makes it's cost prohibitive from our point of view. And we are trying to keep that channel clear. we're trying to make it so it isn't a dog beach, used effectively as a dog beach. So it's, so the sand is kept open through that area. Sorry, the channel's kept open. Excessive costs would just make it mean that we don't necessarily have the funds to do ongoing maintenance, which that's we would like to continue to monitor as is suggested in the conditions.
Thank you. Commissioner Amanzadeh, did you have a question for Mr. Matthews?
I it's more so for staff.
Oh, okay. But, thank you, sir.
Okay. Any other questions, just let me know.
Absolutely. So, do you want to ask a question?
Yes.
Go ahead.
I really appreciate all of the special conditions on this, but I'm concerned because the addition of special conditions are so numerous and detailed that the timeline of 5 years, I guess it's a question. How did you come to the timeline of 5 years for the permit's expiration, given how numerous the special conditions are? I guess I'm a little uncomfortable of, you know, the development of a water quality monitoring plan and conformance with BMPs. I mean, those things are hard to monitor and are, even with the best intentions of the permittee, of the actual crews undertaking those BMPs on a regular basis, is not at all certain. So I'm just interested in whether you considered a shorter time frame for the permit expiration, like 3 years, for example, so that we can check in on some of these BMPs and other safeguards that you put in place.
Well, the 5-year monitoring comes generally out of the regs, which indicate that maintenance-type projects generally wouldn't exceed a 5-year period. This is an amendment to a prior permit. That prior permit, I believe, also had the 5-year time periods, and this has been extended a couple times over I think since 2002 or 2003. So you know, we haven't had any significant problems with this permit at all. I think the county was actually asking for 10 years, so limiting them to 5 years was a bit of staff compromise.
Thank you.
Okay, anything else? Commissioner Vargas.
I just want to see if I can get a little clarification from staff. I have been searching for comments from the public on this item, and I don't seem to find them on the internet. Were there any public comments or submitted written comments from the public?
I don't believe there were written comments from the public on this, so we didn't publish any.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else? All right. Staff, do you have anything further?
Well, given the county's comments, I don't think we would be recommending a change to the special condition for the baseline monitoring, but, of course, we'd like to hear from the commission on that.
Okay. So what's the will of the commission? Do I have a motion?
Sure. 1 second. Maybe
six.
Okay, I move that the commission adopt the staff recommendation to approve coastal development permit amendment request number 5-02-031-A6 pursuant to the staff recommendation and recommend a yes vote.
Second.
You care to speak to your motions? Okay. The makers of the motion are asking for a yes vote. Is there any unwillingness for unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, the motion passes.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. That takes us to item 12, which is the Deputy Director's report for the San Diego Coast District. There's three waivers for development in Rancho Santa Fe, Solana Beach, and San Diego, and immaterial amendments for permits for projects in Encinitas and Solana Beach. Among these, I do want to highlight the amendment for the permit for Encinitas Land Ventures 1 LLC for their 130-unit resort hotel on North Coast Highway in Encinitas. This hotel was originally approved in 1992, and the project was last before the commission in 2006, known then as KSL Encinitas Resort. For an amendment to allow up to 100 of the units to be sold as condominium hotel units. The development included a public beach accessway,
which has been constructed, but the resort itself hasn't yet been built. The developer is now changing the project back to a standard hotel without the condo hotel units and is making some other more minor changes to the hotel design. Staff believes the shift back to standard hotel rooms is beneficial overall, as it will mean the project will add more rooms to the existing pool of overnight accommodations in the area than the prior project did, which will support more visitors. Also, since this isn't planned to be a low or moderate cost hotel, the permit has a requirement to pay an in-lieu fee to offset impacts on lower cost recreation facilities. And as part of this amendment, the applicant has agreed to increase the fee to account for inflation over the past 12 years. So with that agreement, staff incorporated into the proposal, staff concluded that the changes to the permit could be approved through the immaterial amendment process. We haven't received any comments in opposition to this item or any of the items on the director's report, so staff recommends the commission concur with the executive director.
Okay, any ex partes? Any objection to unanimous concurrence with the deputy director's report? Seeing no objection, we concur.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Item 13 is for applications moved from regular to consent calendar for the San Diego Coast District, of which there are two items. 16B, the San Alijo Lagoon Conservancy project to build trails and do habitat restoration on the site known as the Harbaugh property in Solana Beach. And item 16C, the Haas application for a residence on Yarmouth Court in Mission Beach. There are addenda on both of these items to make some adjustments to the special conditions, which are acceptable to the applicants. There haven't been any comments in opposition to the project, so staff's recommending these items get moved to and approved on the consent calendar.
Any ex partes? Do I have a motion on the consent calendar?
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the consent calendar.
Second. All right. Any unwillingness for unanimous approval of the consent calendar? Seeing none, we approve.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That takes us to item 14A, which is a request to extend the 60-day time limit for commission to act on Oceanside's LCP amendment to consolidate several zoning districts. We are targeting a hearing in early 2019 on this item. City's in agreement with the extension, so staff's recommending the commission extend the 60-day time limit for 1 year.
Okay. Do I have a motion?
Yes, Madam Chair. I'll move commission extend the 60-day time limit to act on the City of Oceanside LCP amendment number LCP 6 OCN 18692 for a period of 1 year and ask for a yes vote.
Any comments? Okay, the makers of the motion are asking for a yes vote. Seeing no objection to a yes vote, the time extension is granted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Item 14B was postponed, which takes us to item 15A, and Melody Lassiter from our San Diego Coast District office is going to do the staff presentation on this matter.
Okay. Good morning, Commissioners. Item 15A is a request by the San Diego Unified Port District to amend their port master plan to allow for the construction and operation of a permanent performance venue, the Bayside Performance Park, at a waterfront park in downtown San Diego. The subject amendment is project-driven, and the project proponent is the San Diego Symphony Orchestra Association. After the proposed amendment is certified, the port will process a CDP for the project, which will not be appealable to the commission. The standard of review for the subject PMPA is Chapter 8 of the Coastal Act. Slide 2, please. The project would be located at Embarcadero Marina Park South, a public park on a peninsula that extends into the bay and is bordered by a marina to the north and the San Diego Convention Center and numerous hotels to the east. Slide 3. The landscaped urban park contains a public promenade, public fishing pier, deli and bait shop, basketball courts, exercise equipment, gazebo, picnic tables, restrooms, and a parking lot. Slide 4. Since 2004, the port has issued a non-appealable CDP to the Symphony to set up a temporary performance venue in the northern third of the 10.8-acre park for 120 consecutive days in summer, during which time 37 performances are allowed with a capacity up to 5,200 attendees. The proposed amendment would authorize the development of a permanent venue to be operated and used primarily by the Symphony in the same area of the park occupied by the temporary venue. Slide 5. The performance venue would consist of a 57-foot-high acoustic shell, an art display consisting of LED lights on the interior of the shell that would light the translucent material that comprises the shell, a sloped synthetic turf lawn, box office, two food pavilions, fencing, and restrooms. The maximum capacity of the venue would increase from 5,200 to 10,000 persons, and the number of events allowed would increase from 37 events to 55 full or 110 half-day events, which is equivalent to 15% of the year. Improvements to the rest of the park are also proposed and would include widening the public promenade, installing new benches, replacing the existing lighting, basketball courts, and fitness equipment, reconfiguring the parking lot to add 4 parking stalls and installing solar panels, refurbishing the gazebo and restrooms, and new landscaping. Slide 6. The amendment would authorize the permanent closure of 0.35 acres of park space in order to accommodate the box office, food pavilions, and back-of-house facilities. To mitigate for this loss, the amendment includes provisions that require the Symphony to fund the creation of an equal amount of park space elsewhere within the Port District, with priority given to the expansion of Pepper Park, a public park located along the waterfront in National City and circled on this slide. National City is a disadvantaged community that has limited access to waterfront recreation and open space. Thus, the creation of new park space along the waterfront would significantly improve coastal access in this community. Slide 7, please. To ensure the general public is able to access the Bayside Performance Park, the amendment includes provisions requiring the venue to remain open to the public at least 85% of the year, equivalent to 310 days, which would be an increase over the 245 days per year the park has historically been open to the public with the temporary venue. The expanded promenade, however, would remain open to the public at all times, which would be an improvement over the existing condition, which does not allow public access to the promenade during events. While 42-inch-tall fencing would be used to separate the grassy area from the promenade during events, the general public would still be able to walk along the promenade or sit on benches and listen to performances for free. Fencing would consist of movable sections that would be required to be opened after an event and remain open during non-event times to allow public access to the park, as shown here. Signage would be installed to notify the public of scheduled performances and ensure that the public is aware that the venue is open to the public outside of the allowable events. The Symphony has also committed to providing various low-cost visitor-serving opportunities, including some combination of reduced ticket pricing, free rehearsals, community events, and public educational programs offered for free of charge to the general public. Slide 8. The port has demonstrated that there is adequate parking nearby to accommodate the maximum capacity events when no events are held at nearby Petco Park. The Symphony will coordinate with Petco Park and the Convention Center when scheduling events and encourage employees and attendees to take nearby public transit by providing transit subsidies. The proposed project would result in additional traffic on event days. However, events held by the Symphony typically occur in the evening, and impacts are expected to occur for a limited period during the hours prior to and following events and would not occur for the full duration of events. The Symphony would continue to prepare an annual traffic management plan and utilize traffic control officers at nearby intersections to minimize traffic impacts. Slide 9. The Port and Symphony have spent a considerable amount of time working with Commission staff on the proposed lighting design. As a result, the proposed lighting design has been refined to minimize potential impacts to migrating birds traveling along the Pacific Flyway.
The proposed art display, in which the fabric shell would be illuminated by small, low-powered LED nodes placed on the interior of the shell that would be programmed to turn on and off and change colors in a sequence, is fairly unique, however, and little is known of its effects on avian species. To address Commission staff's concerns regarding the art display lighting, the Symphony has agreed to limit the art display during migratory periods to short wavelength light, which is less impactful to birds, and reduce the number of art displays to only correspond with holidays or special events for a maximum of 50% of the nights during the migratory period. Slide 10. A sea level rise analysis conducted for the Bayside Performance Park identified that the development may be subject to flooding near the end of its useful life. The proposed amendment contains language to identify that shoreline protection would not be permitted to protect the Bayside Performance Park in the future. The port-issued CDP for the project would also require the Symphony to waive its rights to future shoreline protection and remove the development should sea level rise render the site unusable. Slide 11. A unique provision with the review of portmaster plans and any subsequent amendments is that the Commission may not adopt suggested modifications to them, as provided for in the review of local coastal programs. Therefore, portmaster plans and their amendments must either be approved or denied. Since the middle of the original amendment application, Commission staff have worked with the port to address the Coastal Act issues, and the port has incorporated policy language into their proposal that staff has found acceptable. The proposed amendment is consistent with Chapter 8 policies of the Coastal Act and contains adequate provisions to minimize substantial adverse impacts and provide for other beneficial uses consistent with the public trust, including recreation and wildlife habitat uses. Therefore, staff is recommending the Commission approve the proposed amendment as submitted. The motion and resolution can be found on page 5 of the staff report, and this concludes my presentation.
Thank you very much. Any ex partes? Okay. I have a presentation here from the port. Mr. Merrifield.
If it's okay, maybe about 10 minutes for this. Yeah, that would be the total group of us from San Diego. Good morning, Chair Bosco and members of the Commission. I'm Marshall Merrifield, Commissioner with the San Diego Port District. It's a pleasure to be with you all today and be able to speak on this proposal, an iconic proposal. It has been near and dear to my heart for many years. For nearly two decades, the San Diego Symphony has offered an outstanding summer concert series in a port park by the San Diego Bay. They've been a great partner and co-steward of providing rich cultural experiences to visitors and residents alike. 2 years ago, when I was chairman of the agency, the first agenda item of my first meeting was to begin the coastal development process that brings us here today. The proposal before you would allow a truly unique experience on the waterfront and one that fits squarely into our arts and entertainment zone on the port. This is a project with real dynamic benefits and a new attraction for all. Our vision is to inspire visitor and resident alike with the beauty of the California coast combined with the arts, performing arts, public art, to fire everyone's imagination and creativity. What a great California goal, inspiring all of our imagination and creativity. This is also a proposal that our staff worked with local commission staff to get right. After 10 months of close coordination, the proposal before you is one that incorporates innovative and straightforward protections to guarantee accessibility to the public. Also, the lighting has been carefully designed to achieve a high bar for environmental sensitivity with migrating birds. And this is no easy feat for a project on the edge of downtown San Diego, but they made it happen. It's been great to see our two public agencies working together to provide something special and unique on the San Diego waterfront. And with that, I ask for your support this morning. I'd like now to introduce one of our community leaders, Martha Gilmer, our talented and visionary Chief Executive Officer of the San Diego Symphony. Thank you.
Good morning, and thank you, Marshall. You have been an advocate, hardworking on this project, and I would like to greet you all, Chair Bochco, and the commissioners. Also, thank you to the coastal staff and to the members of the San Diego Port commissioners and staff for their diligent and careful, thoughtful work on this project over the last few years. Today I'm speaking to you on behalf of the Board of Directors, the staff, and the musicians of the San Diego Symphony. Some of our board members and team are here with us today, and I would ask them to stand so we could acknowledge their presence. For more than 17 years, it has been the dream of the San Diego Symphony and many of those people here to create this iconic and beautiful space for people to gather, to be together, to create lasting musical memories, and to reflect that beautiful bay, that coastline of San Diego. We had two goals that were particularly important to us. One is access, and the other one is environmental responsibility. As you have heard, except for the stage and the pavilion areas, the facility will be open to the public, except during performance times, and even then, there's a way to access the perimeter of the park and enjoy the performances. We are committed to assuring that music is available to all, and that the coastline is also available to all. There are children in San Diego that have never been to the Bayside at all, and to experience it through music, this combination of culture and the environment, is indeed a sacred place that we want to encourage and protect. We are committed to assuring that music is available to all through reduced ticket prices, open rehearsals, educational programs, and free concerts. We're also environmentally sensitive, and we've designed it to be light, non-invasive, and sensitive to the special surroundings that sustain this whole area, with sustainable landscaping, a lighting design that incorporates considerations for beauty and safety for all creatures. As you've heard, the design actually reduces the light trespass, or light leaving the property, by 39% compared to existing conditions. And I also want to thank Jim Benya of Benya Consulting, who worked with us to refine our lighting plan. He's here today if you have any questions. But particularly, I like to quote Jim's reaction when he saw these plans, and he said, "What you are about to create is a sublime musical experience for all." We believe it will be an aesthetically stunning performance stage that will reflect the coastline beauty and serve as an iconic reminder of the importance of culture to residents and visitors alike. So with your support today, we're ready. We're ready to move forward to fulfill a 17-year-old dream, to bring people to the coastline, to bring people to the San Diego Symphony, to make music. And it's my pleasure to introduce another very important person to this project, Randa Coniglia, CEO and President of the San Diego Unified Port District.
Good morning. My name is Randa Coniglio. I'm President and CEO of the Port of San Diego. As you heard from our commissioner and from Ms. Gilmer, we're pleased to bring forward a Port Master Plan amendment for the Bayside Performance Park Enhancement Project. This proposal improves visitor-serving facilities and offers enhanced public access on our waterfront in San Diego. The Port is committed to working with the Coastal Commission and with the Symphony to bring forward a well-balanced cultural experience for everyone. This proposal is one that will contribute to regional economic vitality while still allowing for lower-cost recreational experiences. It provides a place for the arts in a beautiful outdoor setting and supports the Port's goals for a vibrant and active waterfront. I'm personally very grateful to your staff's guidance for your staff's guidance and support in working with the Port District staff so we can ensure the Port Master Plan Amendment achieves a high bar of stewardship in order to advance the fundamental principles of public access and environmental protection as envisioned by the Coastal Act. We respectfully request your certification of our amendment, and once this facility is open, we invite you to come visit our new park within a park and to attend one of the many great performances to be offered by the Symphony or its partners. representatives from the port staff, as well as the symphony and their dedicated board of directors, are here to answer any of your questions. Thank you very much for your consideration, and special thank you to local San Diego Coastal Commission staff for working with us to bring this amendment forward to you today.
Thank you. Okay, everyone else I have here is available for questions if we have them. Staff, would you like to say anything more?
The only thing else I would add at this point is just our appreciation to the port and the symphony for working with us so long and hard on this, and also express my appreciation for the San Diego staff who worked so long and hard on this. They really did a great job.
Thank you. Commissioner Brownsey?
I have a question for staff. On the bottom of page 9 and the top of page 10, the issue of the non-appealable project. If you could explain the Coastal Act issue there, which is, so you have the port master plan. I'm sorry, but there's a glare. So I'm going to look over here. So I apologize. There's a Coastal Act issue with respect to, if you just explain the law, because I just had a question.
Do you want to do that?
Thank you, Chris. Yes.
I'd be happy to address that. So under Chapter 8 of the Coastal Act, when a port has adopted a port master plan, there are basically two categories of projects. There are non-appealable and appealable.
Mm-hmm.
So the, you know, certain kinds of projects that aren't sort of classic port projects will tend to be appealable. Other kinds of classic port-related projects will tend to be non-appealable. I think everybody agrees that this particular project, the permit will not be an appealable project. The port master plan needs to include sufficient evidence regarding appealable projects to show that they would be consistent with Chapter 3. It doesn't have that same requirement regarding non-appealable projects, but the Coastal Act still does provide for the delegation of permitting authority under the Coastal Act extends to projects that are included within the Port Master Plan. So we have interpreted that historically as the Port Master Plan, although it doesn't need to provide the same level of detail about non-appealable projects as for appealable projects, still should be identifying non-appealable projects. So this amendment is providing that information, is adding this project to the Port Master Plan as a non-appealable project.
Okay, so a classic non-appealable versus a classic appealable. If you can give me an example. So you're saying that this is a classic non-appealable project?
Yes, so there is
a music venue,
yes,
to me seems like a non-classic port project.
Okay. Well, so Section 30715 of the Coastal Act actually identifies the specific kinds of projects that are appealable. So some of those are, say, oil and gas-related projects, which would be a traditional one. Others are office and residential buildings, sort of general commercial uses that aren't specifically port-related. Those would qualify as appealable. Motels and hotels qualify as appealable.
Okay.
It doesn't call out specifically parks and park-related facilities as being appealable. Other kinds of projects that would tend to be non-appealable would be, port harbor-related projects, aside from certain specified kinds of industrial uses that have an especially high environmental concern, so petrochemical facilities, oil and gas kinds of facilities.
And in the deeper discussion on this particular topic, staff made reference to, with respect to this appealable, non-appealable issue with respect to projects for San Diego, that that's going to be part of a larger discussion in terms of amendments to the port master plan in general, correct?
That's my understanding, yes.
Okay. Yes, that's correct.
Okay, which I think is good. The reason that I asked that question was, one, because I think that the discussions that staff and the port and the symphony had working through those issues, I think, has created not only a terrific project, but I think an innovative project. I mean, I agree with all of the comments that the speakers representing San Diego made. This is an unusual venue. It's beautiful the way it is today. It will be enhanced, I think, and certainly a community asset going forward. But I think, you know, often we want to be careful that within that development that there's still that recognition that this is an incredibly important natural resource as well. It's not just a community resource, which is a terrific project that will provide enormous benefit to the committee, to the community. So thank you for clarifying those issues, and I'm glad we'll be circling back during the discussion on the port master plan. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Certainly. Commissioner Padilla?
I would, unless there are not any further questions or dialogue, I'd be prepared to make a motion and move that the Commission certify the Port Master Plan Amendment Number PMP 6 PSD 18011 as submitted by the San Diego Unified Port District and ask for a yes vote.
Second.
Would you care to speak to
Yes, me? Madam Chair. Thanks. First, congrats. I mean, it's not, I'm going to be candid here, probably too much, but I can count on one hand or less probably in my own years on this commission when I've seen a recommendation from amendment submitted by the Port of San Diego that comes with a recommendation to approve as submitted. So I've somebody frame that. I'm going to frame it and keep it in my office. I would like to extend my congratulations, frankly, to both certainly our San Diego staff and to the staff at the port for working thoughtfully and collaboratively. I think this is an amendment that not only respects the public trust, respects the act, but I think in the end will enhance and diversify, frankly, the access and public experience that occurs at this particular location in the Port Tidelands in San Diego. I appreciate working collaboratively, particularly around the listing and lighting issues. I would echo Commissioner Brownsey's concerns and comments that we still have the listing issue to tackle, I think, in the broader PMPA process. But I think this is an amendment that's worthy that the staff and from this agency and from the port got it correct, and this will be an appropriate enhancement. So I'm very pleased to support it and ask for the support of the commission.
Thank you. Commissioner Almanzada?
Yeah, just want to echo my congratulations. I've just been smiling ear to ear, reading about the project and hearing the comments about it. I really look forward to visiting and enjoying it. And it is wonderful to see a project that, as Commissioner Padilla said, enhances and diversifies public access to the coast and just is an example that there's not just one way to enjoy the coast, and this is a wonderful way. So just happy to see a project like this come before us and approve it, hopefully.
Okay, anyone else? Commissioner Howell.
All right. I hope this isn't a rude question. It's very cool. How much? And is it funded?
I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know if anybody from the port or the symphony can answer that.
$36 million. And fundraising has been underway, and Martha's the head fundraiser. She was in Chicago yesterday beating the bushes. And I want to say that the first $6 million has been raised for the planning design.
Yeah, it's about $45 million.
$45
million.
It went up.
Remember the lighting fixtures.
Yeah, that's right. Right. Sorry about that.
Yeah, it's about $45 million. We've raised $6 million so far, and we have a campaign that's ready to launch as soon as we... It's really helpful for funders to know of your support and your blessing. And so until today and receiving, hopefully receiving that, we're ready to go.
All right. Well, then we better vote quickly. Waste no time. All right. The makers of the motion are asking for a yes vote. Is there any unwillingness for unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, the motion passes. Go raise money. You know, I think we should probably take a short break. Yeah. All right.
We are on item 16A.
16A.
And there is a staff PowerPoint on this item. Great, thank you. So item 16A is a proposal to remodel and expand an existing vacant oceanfront restaurant to connect to the existing Pacific Coast Grill restaurant located immediately to the north. Staff's recommending commission approve the proposed project with conditions, and the applicant is in agreement with the staff recommendation, but I understand there may be some opposition. The subject, slide two, please. Slide two. Okay. Thank you. The subject oceanfront site is located west of South Coast Highway 101 and encompasses two of three contiguous properties, all improved with restaurants known locally as Restaurant Row. Slide three, please. A riprap revetment consisting of more than 1,000 tons of rock currently protects this project site. An 8-foot-wide public accessway is sited on top of the revetment and provides views of the ocean and lateral access. Slide four. The project involves additions and revisions to both stories of the existing vacant restaurant to combine it with the Pacific Coast Grill, which including an approximately 1,000-square-foot addition, a portion of which would occur on the seaward side of the site. However, the extent of the revisions do not constitute redevelopment. Slide five, please. Due to the site's proximity to the ocean, coastal hazards could adversely impact both the proposed development and an existing public access path on top of the riprap revetment. The buildings are in a hazardous location, subject to wave run-up, flooding, and inundation. As sea level rise exacerbates these hazards, the functioning restaurant and proposed additions will be subjected to increased risks. The public path is already subject to wave action and will likely experience increased wave and storm action in the near future as sea level rises. Section 30253 of the Coastal Act requires that new development minimize risk to life and property, not lead to erosion or instability to surrounding sites, or require protection. The applicant is requesting approval for substantial renovations to create a single upgraded facility located in a hazardous area. The concern is that in the future, the applicant may seek approval of new shoreline protection for the restaurant and proposed additions. The applicant submitted a coastal hazards analysis report that concludes the proposed development will be safe from coastal hazards for at least 40 years. The commission geologist and senior engineer agree that the project site will be subject to sustained flooding during large storms in about 40 years. But the risks of wave run-up under rising sea level conditions will likely jeopardize the development well before the site experiences sustained flooding. And before the restaurant building is at substantial risk of coastal flooding, the seaward lateral public accessway nested on top of the revetment will be at risk. The commission could prohibit the revisions and expansion and let the existing structure remain vacant unless the entire structure is moved further inland. The subject site is large, and there is more than adequate room to relocate a restaurant further inland on the site. However, because the relatively flat topography of the site, moving the structure inland would not significantly alleviate flooding risk. The commission also has the option of prohibiting any further development seaward of the existing structure, which is arguably increasing the risk, the degree of risk for the structure. However, the restaurant is a priority visitor-serving use and provides public access to the coast. The additions to the restaurant are relatively minor. The first priority is to maintain the public access corridor on the seaward side of the development. Given that the structure is non-habitable and continues the historic use of the site, rather than have the use abandoned, staff's recommending that the applicant be required to accept all risks and acknowledge that the commercial space will be subject to modification, reduced operation, and possible future abandonment at some point given the inherent flood risk and sea level rise changes. Slide 6, please. Special conditions require that the applicant remove or relocate development that is the subject of this CDP in the future as necessary to accommodate the inland migration of the 8-foot-wide public accessway and public accessway signage. The trigger for that removal will be that the maximum water elevation of the tide plus wave effects exceeds a flood threshold established by Scripps Coastal Data Information Program Potential Flooding Index for Cardiff. If that threshold is exceeded, then the applicant will have to apply for an amendment to remove or relocate portions of the restaurant to accommodate inland relocation of the accessway. The Surfrider organization has submitted a letter objecting to the proposed project. The letter notes that the site is currently subject to hazards, that the proposed development will extend the life of the existing structure, that the remodeled restaurant will not be safe for its economic life, and therefore the project should not be approved. Staff acknowledges that the existing development is currently subject to wave overtopping, and sea level rise is expected to increase wave activity and flooding. The remodeled structure may not be safe for the remaining economic life of the structure, but the improvements are being made to a long-standing existing use. Furthermore, as noted, the existing shoreline accessway seaward of the restaurant is at even greater risk than the structures. The only way to ensure this accessway is maintained is to require that it be moved inland at the point at which it can no longer provide safe public lateral access. Because the accessway is almost immediately adjacent to the existing structures at present, through this permit, the applicant has agreed to remove portions of the restaurant when necessary to ensure the public accessway can retreat inland, thereby maintaining a viable public accessway. There is currently an existing revetment protecting the existing structure, but as conditioned, no additional shoreline protection can be added to protect any of the development approved through this permit. Thus, the proposed project will allow the continued use of a high-priority, visitor-serving commercial facility while ensuring that the public accessway will be available in the future. As conditioned, no additional shoreline protective devices would be permitted to protect the proposed development. The applicant must submit annual monitoring reports for both the revetment and 8-foot-wide public accessway every year for the life of the structure. The monitoring reports will serve as a way to inform the commission if the public accessway is vulnerable to the conditions that may require removal or relocation of the development. Slide 7, please. Thus, as conditioned, the public will have the benefit of continued and expanded access to the restaurant. Commercial operations will be modified as needed over time to preserve the public access and respond to coastal hazards. So the motion and resolution for this item can be found on page 6, and that concludes staff's comments.
Okay, thank you. Any ex partes? Seeing none. I don't have any speaker slips. Is that right? Okay. I do have a speaker slip. Oh, would you come forward then, please? You could tell me your name and...
I'm Ben Bochco and Commission. I'm Steve Goldberg. I'm the owner of Pacific Coast Grill and the Beach House restaurants.
Okay. You're not David Goldberg. Okay.
I have a nephew named David Goldberg, okay. But he's not here today.
Okay. Well, go right ahead.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to be here to answer any questions.
Okay.
And to comment, as a member of the Surfrider Foundation, their submission was on Monday, submission of their objection. And I'd like to add that that's the only objection to this project. So I also wanted to thank the staff. We've worked for 7 months on developing a program that would work, conditions that would work, which we agreed to. So we have an addendum to those agreements that address further issues with the protest. And just yesterday, I received that addendum. The language on the addendum is agreed to by us via the staff report to us on Monday. And so I just want to mention that the addendum, which addresses what we were told was a solution to the objections, was consistent on number two, but the language changed on number four. And I just want, for the record, to say that I don't I had agreed to number two and not the language on number four. So I would prefer that we retain the language that we had agreed to. But the staff was working under duress, you know, just getting this information on Monday, submitting that to me yesterday, and having to respond quickly. But, you know, we want this project to go through. We've worked on this since April. So we need to get going with the project, which is a existing restaurant that's been there since the 70s. And Pacific Coast Grill has been on the Coast Highway since 1995. So people are ready to see a vacant restaurant be built, and we're ready to do it.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Staff, do you want to make any comment about condition number four?
Or, well, I
guess it's not a condition four.
No, I believe the change that Mr. Goldberg's talking about is to the findings that clarify that the language added in special condition
six
subsection E would apply to this whole restaurant once it's connected together. This will be a single restaurant building. And I guess it was our understanding, even as of this morning, that the applicant was in agreement with that condition language and wasn't objecting to the findings, but I'm hearing something different now.
Do you have an objection to four?
Well, no. I mean, I don't have an objection to the substance. I just have an objection to the wording. I'm fine with what was presented to me in number two, which you can see is scratched out, and the wording is replaced. Any portion of the structure which is subject to the was development subject to the CDP, but then the language which I agreed to changed, and in number four, it reads any portion of the two structures, and then the development authorized by the CDP is crossed out. It's just I was put in an awkward position just seeing this yesterday and having to make a decision on this by today. I don't want to delay the project in any way. I just want to point out that both staff was put in an awkward position having to respond so quickly, as was I. And
okay.
I just don't like the fact that the language that that I agreed to in number two is different than the language in number four.
Okay.
And I want that to be on the record.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. If there is something that's not reconciled, you'll look at it. Okay.
Well, we thought we were in agreement on both the change to the condition and to
the
findings to explain it and explain its intent.
Right. Well, you may
be. Which was its intent all along.
Right. You may be, but if there is any little... Yeah. I don't know how to fix it because I don't know exactly what it is.
well... That is our staff recommendation.
Okay.
In the addendum, and if the commission would want to change that, it would take commission action to do that.
All right. So, Commissioner Brownsey, do you have something?
I have a question. So it's on this specifically, because when I look at that revetment and the path on top of it, it looks kind of scary to me with respect to the wave run up, particularly in the winter. So from the pictures, it looks like when you have a king tide or a storm tide, the water's already running up on that revetment, right?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. So, is it Mr. Goldberg? Could you come back for a sec if you don't mind? So, thank you. So my understanding was that you did agree that if the property became unusable because of the tides and the sea level rise, that you would, and the revetment was no longer, the path on the revetment was no longer available for the public to walk on, that you had agreed that you would move that path, make the renovations to your first floor to move that path so that it would then be right where some of your patio areas are.
Correct.
Okay. So that was my understanding of what that language says.
And mine as well.
Okay. So, and I think the addendum is consistent with that. So I guess what I'm trying to understand is you believe there's some discrepancy there.
Well, the first change deals with the renovation explained in the CDP.
Right.
And that language is stricken in the second wording under number 4.
Right.
Oh, I see.
So if it were consistent, if the language in number 2 were used in number 4, I'd have no problem whatsoever.
But is it the difference between the two buildings and the one building?
No.
No. It's just the CDP, right?
You just the word Carl. CDP is eliminated. So,
right.
And I didn't see this until really late yesterday. So I just had agreed the language, which changed. So if it were consistent, that would be fine.
Okay. So, right. I mean, that's a reasonable request. No, that's a reasonable. So
this CDP is only the two words that are missing. In between 2E and 4 and number 4, you've struck out this CDP instead, and the other one you didn't. That's the difference.
Subject to this CDP.
And I think what he's saying is it's the buildings that are being approved in this CDP.
Well, I think we can the first condition, it says now that the permittee shall remove or relocate in part or in whole any portion of the structures which are the subject of this CDP.
Right, and then go down to 4.
Requires
the applicant in the future to remove or relocate any portion of the two structures, and then you struck out authorized by the CDP.
Well, our intent with the change, the first change, was to make it clear that it would apply to the structures that are the subject of the CDP, which includes both restaurants.
Right.
Okay.
So why is
so the findings simply clarify that.
Can we just put in CDP so he knows that it's consistent with number 2?
Yeah, we can add that language in.
Okay.
Great.
And that.
So there's no confusion then. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, so...
So if we could just clarify exactly what the change to the condition language is, just so we have a clear record.
Well, this wouldn't be a change to the condition language.
Right.
This would be a change to the findings to match the condition.
Okay, so clarify that for...
Yes. Okay, so having said that, so okay, good. We clarified that so that now you're comfortable and clear about the language.
Yes.
Okay,
just
good.
Yes,
all right.
Thank you. And it wouldn't be a problem if it wasn't just given to us yesterday to deal with. And
of course.
Sure. So I had agreed on Tuesday to the language, and then the language changed yesterday. It just threw me for a loop. You know, I mean, I just wanted to be consistent and fair.
As you should, because the words are important, and in this process often there are small change, things that appear to be small changes can actually have big impacts. So that's completely reasonable. But I want to circle back to just the policy, which is, what are your thoughts? Because what I'm concerned about is, I don't know how much longer. I mean, this is a huge project. It's a laudable project. I think it's great that you're going to be opening this restaurant. It's going to be public serving. We're going to have fabulous, right? Everybody's going to be really happy. But what I'm a little worried about is, how long is that revetment actually going to last with the pathway on it? And what's your thoughts? I mean, are you're totally dialed in that you may have to make some major renovations?
It's the condition that I accepted. And that that I understand. I mean, it's a business decision. I mean, we've owned the restaurant next door for 7 years, and we've seen some high tides, and there's no real issue. I mean, the path remains. And so I think that, that working with staff, and they, again, you know, worked hard to come up with a viable solution that we, you know, that, that we agreed to because, you know, because of this risk. And it is a real risk. And so, hey, 40 years from now, I'll be 106, so I'll deal with it then. And
right. Well, I think that one of the things we're concerned about is you may be not 106, but it could be sooner. So, but it sounds like you're very clear on what your obligations and your responsibilities are under the conditions of this permit. And so, I thank you for asking the those questions, and I'm glad we were able to clarify that other issue for you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Commissioner Padilla, would you care to take this?
Yes, let me get to the, if somebody's got it up earlier, please feel free, but I'm trying to go to the, all right, thanks.
I move that the commission approve coastal development permit application number 6-18-0201, subject to the conditions set forth by the staff recommendations, and recommend a yes vote.
Second.
Second.
Anyone care to speak further? Okay. The makers of the motion are asking for a yes vote. Any unwillingness for unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, the motion passes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Items 16 B and C were moved to consent, so that takes us now to item 17 A. And there is a staff
Can I just say one thing? I didn't see there was a speaker card for 16 A. Doug Gibson, did you want to speak? Because it was on the consent calendar. Is Doug Gibson? Okay, thank you.
All right, that takes us now to item 17A, which includes a request for amendment to authorize the removal of unpermitted fill and the restoration of up to 14.3 acres of wetland habitat. Slide 2. Thank you. The subject site is part of a 37-lot residential subdivision approved by the commission in 1987. Because the city of San Diego now has a certified LCP, the standard of review for the project is the LCP. There is an addendum for this item, which includes a memo from the commission's ecologist, Lori Cotine, and includes staff's response to some concerns raised by the applicant since the staff report was published. Staff is recommending approval of the amendment request with a number of special conditions to provide adequate protection to coastal resources consistent with the city's LCP. Slide 3, please. The subject site is located in the Carmel Valley section of the city of San Diego, just south of State Route 56 and about 5 miles inland of the coast. The subject site is bisected by the coastal zone boundary. Slide 4. Uses on the site include the Rancho Glen Estates residential development, agriculture, and undeveloped open space. Agricultural uses are split on two separate sections of the site and are connected by an unpaved access road. This road is the only access to the western portion of the site. Slide 5, please. The natural features of the site include McGonigal Creek, a USGS Blue Line stream, a mixture of non-natives and native riparian vegetation surrounding McGonigal Creek, and an ephemeral stream that crosses over the access road into an existing culvert that connects to McGonigal Creek. During storm events, the stream floods the access road, impeding access to the eastern portion of the site. Slide 6, please. In 2000, the applicant placed approximately 900 cubic yards of fill within the road without benefit of a coastal development permit to elevate the road out of an existing flood area and maintain access to all portions of the site. You can see the area in question on the slide, with the darker, wet portion of the road being where the tributary historically ran across and on top of the dirt road. The unpermitted fill placed by the applicant effectively dammed the tributary and created a one-acre pond on an adjacent property. Slide 7, please. Since 2000, the ponded area has matured and become a high-quality wetland. The pond includes a variety of native habitat types and is likely suitable habitat for a number of sensitive wildlife species, including least Bell's vireo. In 2001, the City of San Diego issued a notice of violation to the applicant for the unpermitted placement of fill on the road. In 2003, a judgment was reached between the city, state, and applicant requiring the roadway be brought back to its pre-violation condition. In 2007, the Army Corps issued a restoration order requiring that the natural course of the waterway be restored and the off-site pond drained. In order to meet these requirements, the applicant's proposing to remove the unpermitted fill. But once the fill is removed, the pond is expected to drain, and as a result, all or some of the existing habitat will be impacted. Slide 8, please. Specifically, draining the pond will result in the loss of about 1 acre of freshwater marsh and 0.7 acres of southern riparian scrub. The placement of the fill on and around the road covered an additional 0.04 acres of southern riparian scrub. Furthermore, the applicants identified about 0.37 acres of southern maritime chaparral impacts from unauthorized grading activities that occurred at the time of the subdivision. So in total, the project would result in 1.74 acres of impacts to wetland habitat and 0.37 acres of upland impacts. Slide 9, please. The project would remove the unpermitted fill, which would result in the removal of the pond. Draining a pond is not an allowable use in wetlands under the city's LCP. However, the pond is a result of an unpermitted action and is located on a parcel not owned by the applicant, and the property owner does not support maintaining the pond. In addition, both the City of San Diego and the Corps have required the applicant to restore the tributary back to its natural condition. Thus, the retention of the wetlands is not feasible, and the impacts associated with the removal of the fill are considered unavoidable. Slide 10, please. The LCP requires that mitigation be provided for all unavoidable impacts to wetlands. For impacts to freshwater marsh in the coastal zone, the LCP requires mitigation to be provided at a 4-to-1 ratio, or provide 4.2 acres of mitigation, and for riparian scrub mitigation must be provided at 3-to-1, which gives 2.2 acres of mitigation. Thus, the overall mitigation required for all impacts to wetlands is 6.39 acres. Slide 11, please. The proposed creation restoration plan includes up to 14.3 acres of wetland habitat area. The mitigation is proposed on the western portion of the site and within the area previously used as nursery growing ground. The wetland creation area consists of a long, narrow, flat piece of land within the floodplain of McGonigal Creek. This area currently supports mostly bare dirt and weedy species. And as proposed, the restoration site would be graded to create appropriate elevations to support wetlands, and then the area would be planted with appropriate wetland plants. The area would also be provided long-term monitoring and management. The applicant is proposing to create 14.3 acres of habitat, which is more than what is being required for mitigation, to potentially use the habitat as a mitigation bank in the future. However, the mitigation bank component is not before the commission at this time, and that undertaking would require a separate CDP to be issued by the City of San Diego. Slide 12, please. The applicant is, however, requesting the commission reduce the amount of required mitigation for wetland impacts from 6.39 acres to 4.29 acres. The applicant has made two arguments in support of reducing the mitigation ratio. First, the applicant disagrees that the pond area should be considered freshwater marsh and has provided an updated biological memo that states the habitat would not be considered freshwater marsh because they assert there must be vegetation present for the area to qualify as that kind of habitat. Instead, the applicant asserts the area would be more appropriately defined by the LCP as marine habitat or natural flood channel. Both of these habitat types have a reduced mitigation requirement of 2-to-1. Slide 13, please. However, the Commission's ecologist has reviewed all the biological reports, including the latest memo, and has visited the site and disagrees with this assertion. A memo was provided by staff's ecologist that refuted the applicant's claims and provided that marshes are often more both vegetated and unvegetated, and that in observations on visits to the site, the area clearly supports marsh vegetation. And Ms. Cotine is here and will be able to answer any additional questions on the habitat quality. Thus, allowing anything less than a 4-to-1 mitigation ratio required by the LCP could not be supported. Additionally, the memo indicates that the pond is a high-quality wetland area that provides year-round foraging and nesting habitat for birds, and thus the ecological value of the habitat would also not support the reduced mitigation ratio. Therefore, even if the LCP would allow for a reduced mitigation ratio, such a reduction couldn't be supported given the quality of the habitat and the nature of the impacts. The applicant further argues the area currently covered by the pond may support some amount of wetland habitat after the pond is drained, and thus the ultimate loss of wetlands may end up being less than the 1.74 acres. And while the Commission's ecologist agrees that once the fill is removed and tributary reestablished, some of the wetland vegetation may remain or return, it's not possible to predict exactly how much wetland vegetation, if any, will remain. So at this time, we have to assume that the entire pond will be lost and the full amount of mitigation must be provided. However, if a portion of the site remains as high-functioning wetlands years after the pond is drained, the applicant can submit a request to amend the subject permit to reevaluate the extent of impacts associated with the project. So staff maintains that the required mitigation for impacts to wetlands is 6.39 acres, and Special Condition 8 has been included, and would require the applicant to submit a final wetlands mitigation plan that includes creation restoration of no less than 6.39 acres of wetland habitat. Slide 14, please. Regarding the impacts to Southern Maritime Chaparral, the city's LCP requires that impacts to uplands be mitigated at either 2-to-1 or 1-to-1, depending on whether or not the mitigation is located within the city's multiple species habitat area. The applicant would prefer to determine a mitigation site at a future date. The commission typically requires that mitigation occur as close to the impact site as feasible. And in any case, a mitigation site needs to be identified at this time. The permit is approved, not deferred to a future time outside the commission approval process. In this case, there is area on site that can accommodate all of the required mitigation for impacts to upland habitat. So Special Condition 9 requires the applicant provide an updated mitigation and monitoring plan for the 0.37 acres of impacts to Southern Maritime Chaparral to be provided on site consistent with the city's LCP. Slide 15, please. Other special conditions recommended include timing requirements for removal of the unpermitted fill, final wetland and upland mitigation and monitoring plans, restrictions on work during nesting season, and requires the applicant to record a deed restriction over the portions of the property that will provide mitigation for the impacts to sensitive habitats. And finally, because the project includes the removal of unpermitted development, Special Condition 13 requires that all condition compliance requirements are completed within 180 days of the Commission's action. The motion and resolution can be found on page 4 of the staff report, and that concludes staff's comments at this time.
All right. Thank you very much. Any ex partes? Okay. Commissioner, I'm sorry. I have speakers. So I was so distracted, but I think they're out there watching the otters. So, Mr. Goldberg and Mr. Metcalf, how much time would you like apiece?
Well, in total, we would respectfully request 15 minutes, given the history. And split, we'll do our best to be quicker than that.
Right. The 15 split between the two of you?
Yes, that's correct. Okay. Good afternoon, Chair Bochco and Honorable Commissioners. I am David Goldberg of Armbruster Goldsmith and Delvet, counsel to the applicant and no relation to the previous Goldberg who spoke earlier. Although it's entirely possible, I really don't know. And can we have our presentation put up on the screen, please, and stop the clock in the interim? Thank you. We appreciate the opportunity to present this permit amendment request to allow new wetland creation and restoration efforts at the Barshefsky Family Trust property in the city of San Diego. We really appreciate staff's efforts on this application and do support the staff recommendation subject to three requested modifications, which we'll address in a moment. But first, Paul Metcalf will give a brief background on the property's history and the requirement for the requested amendment, as well as the extensive benefits that the proposed wetlands creation and restoration work would provide.
Thank you, David. Good afternoon, Commissioners. I want to compliment staff on their presentation because it was quite good, and there's a lot of redundancy in what I was going to say, and I'm going to try to keep that out. I'm representing the Barshefsky Family Trust, and I've been working with the Barshefskys since 2007. Been working with the City of San Diego, the Corps of Engineers, the State Department of Fish and Wildlife, which was Fish and Game at that time. In 2012 or 11 or 12, actually contacted the local office of the Coastal Commission to bring them up to date on what we were doing and how we were proceeding. We had a very difficult time. There's a lot of complexity to this that I don't want to bore you with. That's okay.
One second. Is that door totally closed? Because
I think it's closed as it gets.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Then let's close that one too. Then thank you.
Anyways, a lot of sincere efforts. As David said, we're very pleased with staff's recommendation, and I'm impressed with your presentation, the PowerPoint. You've already heard that the property is in Carmel Valley, that it has an approved subdivision, that it was used as a horticultural nursery for years, which is a growing nursery. It's not a retail nursery. A little bit different in some people's understanding. And that's what the balance, when you see on there, the growing ground, as it was, for the nursery is. And we've explained a little bit about the access road, too, I think, where staff explained about it. It was the only way that you could get from one part of the property to the balance of the property. So there was there's a creek crossing, McGonigal Creek, that was predating all, it's been there for 80 years or so. So it's an existing creek crossing. It's the only way to get across. Before that happens, this road is an area where an ephemeral stream used to cross it. So in the wet season, there was no way to get from one part of the property to the other. The property owner assumed that there was, it was under his agricultural uses provisions in the permit, and he would be allowed to maintain access as an agricultural use to the balance of the property. And so it wasn't malicious intent that created this condition. It was an assumption that turned out to be incorrect, that created the road that created the dam. That there's a nursery rhyme about this, and I think working through the process with the city and all the groups that were involved took a long time, as you can imagine. If I'm 2007, that's 11 years ago. We did get a restoration order from the Corps to solve this problem. Their solution to it was to put a culvert at the original drainage invert, and that would drain the pond. Staff felt that that was not an appropriate way to address this issue, and they asked us to take the road out entirely, which would once again return it to the original drainage path, and we've agreed to do that. But because, as has been so clearly pointed out, we've got this beautiful pond there that everybody would like to see stay, including the Barshevskis, but our neighbors are don't want it there, so we have to take it out. We have the stipulated judgment that requires us to do that. So we worked with the Army Corps and the city and Fish and Wildlife, and we've come up with a restoration plan that would mitigate for the worst-case scenario, which is the elimination of the pond and all the habitat in it. In the city's review of this, the open water and the pond and the habitat in it was considered one thing, and it had a different classification. So they gave us a different ratio for mitigation. We had a four-acre site that we were supposed to do. The staff is asking for an additional 2 acres. That's what a lot of this is about. So give me 1 second here so I don't be, I'm still being redundant, I realize that. So because the wetland creation areas are subject to open space deed restrictions, which were part of our original permit, in order to remove the vegetation, we need an amendment to our existing permit. That would allow us to do the proposed work of taking the road out and draining the pond. This image that you see now before you is from our city-approved wetlands mitigation plan. Does not include the additional 2 acres that staff is requesting, but it does include in the circled with yellow dots. The circled area, that's what we call phase one or part one, that is entire mitigation that's required by the city coastal development site development permit that we got. And that includes in the purple area, all of the existing creek, which will be restored, enhanced, brought back into a natural state. And it includes what looks like a little area of this 20-acre lot at the west end of the property. That would be the 4 acres that we would add to the exercise. this area becomes part of a larger effort that would be used by the family to help underwrite some of the costs that they've incurred over these. Well, we go back to the 2001, it's 17 years, right? And so the additional area of mitigation can be used for other projects in San Diego which have wetlands impacts and could come to this property and say, our wetlands impacts can be mitigated here on site. They would have all the requirements that you are requesting. It would have the easements, would have the monitoring, would have the permanent management, have the endowment. All of those things would be part of this process. It is a little bit of a way for the Barshevskis to recoup some of the efforts and money that they've had to spend over the years. So that would be the 14 acres that staff referenced. And I'll limit my redundancy now and sit down and be glad to answer any questions. And David will explain what our requests are a little bit more clearly.
Thanks, Paul. Great job. So we do have a few requests, and as Paul mentioned, we really are grateful to staff for how hard they've worked on this. A number of staff members had this before this current staff, and this group brought it to the finish line. We do have a few requested revisions. One area of disagreement, as staff noted and accurately explained the issue, is on one of the mitigation ratios. The city's LCP has different mitigation ratios. There is an area of disagreement with respect to the open water habitat within the pond. There are, in the project biologist's estimation, two different, and staff agrees with this, two different components of the pond. There is the center component, which is the open water, and then there's a portion along the perimeter. There's an agreement that the ratio for the perimeter of the pond, the southern riparian scrub, would be mitigated at a 3-to-1 ratio. As we see on this slide here, this relates to the center component of the pond, which we believe, and the project biologist has opined, is open water habitat, which is unvegetated marine habitat. The city's LCP has a 2-to-1 mitigation ratio for that. The commission's ecologist, Ms. Cotin, notes in her report that this supports cattails and bulrush, and this may just be a fact dispute. We believe that's accounted for in the portion of the perimeter of the pond that's mitigated as southern riparian scrub. And so we are requesting that the open water habitat be mitigated at 2-to-1 instead of 4-to-1. Now, the commission in the past has deviated from mitigation ratios when the mitigation to be provided is of such high quality that it compensates for the lower ratio. And we know that the commission's ecologists and the project biologists really do agree that the mitigation that will be provided here is high quality. And so even with a lower mitigation ratio, we believe it would result in the same kind of high quality wetland habitat that the commission is seeking to establish. This would result in 2 acres less of required mitigation, but it's important to note that that mitigation would still be provided. It would essentially be shifted over to the voluntary component, and the Barshevskis are certainly committed to doing that component. It's not a requirement of the CDP, and so we understand you would say, how can we be assured that that will be required? But at a minimum, they intend to be doing at least these 2 acres to essentially fund a lot of the cost associated with this work. So it's really not a matter of whether or not it will happen. It's just which batch it goes into. And we've submitted requested language at Exhibit B to our November 2nd letter to address this. Our second request relates to building in a mechanism into the CDP to reduce the required mitigation acreage if the impacts to the pond's wetland habitat really are less than what's anticipated. Staff has said that that could be put off until a future CDP. Our position on that is that we think it is possible and should be built into this CDP as a mechanism. We think it's more appropriate to do that really to ensure that this CDP and the mitigation it's imposing really has a nexus to the actual impacts and not require the applicant to have to come back in the future for another amendment, a future discretionary approval to handle this true-up. We think it should be built into this CDP and that it really is a fact-finding exercise. And so after the establishment period, what we have proposed is that when we make our submission together with the monitoring report for the wetlands that we're creating, the biologists would submit a report related to the amount of impacts that actually occurred. That would be subject to review and approval of the commission's ecologist and the executive director. And if based on that, the impacts really were less than what were anticipated, there would be a mechanism to handle the true-up as a part of the CDP. We think that also saves staff resources and the commission's time for a future amendment. And again, we've submitted language at Exhibit B to our November 2nd letter. Our last request relates to Special Condition 9, and this relates to the flexibility to do the upland mitigation off-site. We haven't committed to doing it off-site. What we're asking for is the flexibility to do so. The city's LCP and its biology guidelines specifically contemplate and in some cases actually recommend off-site mitigation. And this is not an issue of cost or feasibility. The mitigation could be done on-site. However, because the land on-site that is available and suitable for upland mitigation is small and somewhat fragmented, the project's biologist believes the mitigation would be better assured by purchasing off-site mitigation credits from an established, managed, and monitored mitigation bank. While the staff report and staff's presentation expressed a concern that this site is not known, we would agree, and we have proposed that that be subject to the review and approval of the executive director. And so if the executive director didn't sign off on use of an off-site location, then we would be required to do that on-site. And just as an additional note, if the condition allowing for an off-site location were amenable to the, if the commission were amenable to that, we would agree that it could only be at a Coastal Commission approved mitigation bank to provide you with the additional certainty that it's at a location that you are comfortable with. That concludes our remarks, and again, we appreciate all of staff's attention to this and respectfully request adoption of the staff recommendation subject to our three requested revisions, and we are available for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Staff?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to clarify a couple things that I heard during the presentation there, there was a statement that in draining the pond, I just wanted to clear, draining the pond, they'll only be draining the pond. They will not be actively going in there and excavating that area out. So one of the comments made it sound like you were actually going to go in and do work in that pond area, and that's not accurate, correct? Okay. Right, okay, thank you. Based on the LCP, you know, again, we don't see justification for reducing the wetland mitigation ratio down to 2-1. Of course, we covered all these points in our initial comments, and as far as the habitat quality, Dr. Cotin is here to answer questions about that issue if you have them. And that concludes my comments.
Okay. Just so I understand, is there a difference between the city's LCP requirement of mitigation and ours, or is it just a matter of interpretation of the type of wetlands?
No, there's no difference. This is a mitigation ratio that comes straight out of the LCP.
Okay.
But it is an interpretation question, you're right.
In terms of
about what kind what of habitat applies, this is.
Which mitigation ratio applies to which kind of... Okay, okay, Commissioner Padilla.
Just to follow that briefly, just for the record purposes, so there may be a factual dispute as to the nature of the center portion as to what is most appropriately applied in terms of the mitigation standard?
Well, according to their biologist, but I think I'd like to let our biologist speak to that.
Could we? Thank you.
Yeah, I would say that there is a dispute about where you would actually draw the line separating the different habitats. So there is a southern riparian scrub habitat, and that's characterized by a certain set of species that has a classification that is accepted by the CDFW and which we draw from all the time. And then the inner portion of what I refer to as a marsh, it's been kind of given the name Party Pond by the people who live there, but to me it's a marsh. And that is an area that is distinct from the southern riparian scrub habitat, that is the inner portion that includes cattails and bulrush and other vegetation that is commonly found in freshwater marsh. And in my professional opinion, the inner area is much better classified as a marsh than a flood channel. And so therefore, under the City of San Diego LCP, a freshwater marsh is mitigated at a ratio of 4-1, and we think that that's the appropriate ratio for this impact.
Okay, anyone else? What's the will of the commission? Commissioner Padilla.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll move the commission approve the proposed amendments to Coastal Development Permit Application 686-699-83, subject to the conditions set forth in the staff recommendation. Ask for a yes vote.
Second. Would you like to speak any further?
Your second?
Okay. The makers of the motion are asking for a yes vote. Any unwillingness for a unanimous yes? Seeing no unwillingness, the motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So that concludes the San Diego Coast District agenda, and just give us a couple minutes to swap out here.
Okay. Sometimes.
We're ready when you are.
I'm sorry.
Wedding rings.
Yes. Proceed.
Okay, we will. Thank you, Madam Chair. That'll take us down to the North Central Coast District. We don't have anything to report in the Deputy Director's report today, so we're actually down to item number 21A. This is the revised findings for the Commission's approval of the La Casanera patio project from this past September in Fort Bragg. We prepared the findings we think accurately reflect what the Commission did in that coastal permit action, and we're recommending that you adopt them. We did work with the applicant and the county to ensure that we got it right, and all parties are in agreement that that's the case in this set of findings. The motion's found at the top of page 6 of the staff report. And the commissioners who are eligible to vote on the revised findings are Commissioners Amanzada, Brownsey, Groom, Howell, Padilla, Peskin, Sundberg, Vargas, and Chair Bochco. And that concludes our remarks.
Do I have a motion?
Sure.
I just wanted to clarify, was there an ex parte disclosure?
No.
I may admit. Okay.
I would move the commission adopt the revised findings in support of the commission's action on September 13, 2018, approving coastal development permit number P770579-A3 and recommend a yes vote.
Second.
Anyone want to discuss their motion? Okay.
It accurately reflects what we did.
Thank you very much. Of the commissioners available to eligible to vote, do I see any objection to adopting the revised findings? Seeing none, the motion passes.
Thank you, Chair Bochco. That'll take us down to 21B, and this is revised findings as well. This is for the commission's denial of the Lawson's Landing campground improvements from last November. Again, we prepared findings that we believe accurately reflect the commission's action, and we recommend that you adopt them. The motion's found on the top of page 11. Commissioners in this case eligible to vote are Commissioners Amanzada, Groom, Howell, Luevano, Padilla, Peskin, Chair Bochco, and Vice Chair Turnbull Sanders.
Okay, any ex partes?
Madam Chair, I do have an ex parte, which is actually not related to this, but out of an abundance of caution, I am going to read it to you and ask to be recused. On September 22nd, 2018, at about 1:45 p.m., I participated in a field trip with Supervisor Dennis Redoni of Marin County at Lawson's Landing, which meeting included Catherine Caulfield, Bridget Mitchell, Horm Hanchi, Justin Lawson, Ann Baker, not this Ann Baker, but another Ann Baker, Mike Lawson, Tom Flynn, Carl Vogler, Jeff Stafford, Janine Mana from the Coastal Commission, Stephanie Rexing from the Coastal Commission, Supervisor Redoni, Bonnie Smets, and Scott and Stephanie Miller. And we discussed plans to modify the original project proposal, which the Coastal Commission had previously rejected. And the project sponsor specifically discussed revising the wastewater proposal, removing certain aspects of Lawson's Landing Center. And I have an ex parte on file, but I filed it after the 7 days, and so I am going to recuse myself from the Lawson's Landing matter.
Thank you, Commissioner Peskin. Commissioner Brownsey.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Also, in an abundance of caution, while I did not agree to an ex parte, I did receive a communication from a party, from Mr. Tom Flynn, and wherein he indicated that since their last hearing, since our hearing last November, Lawson's Landing has worked very hard with the commission and all interested parties to develop a revised amendment for Area 6, which is responsive to commissioner direction last year. We have been requested to do an alternatives analysis of all potential approaches, which would be consistent with commission direction, the Coastal Act, Lawson's Landing, CDP, and its intent to provide both environmental protection and lower cost coastal access. We are still in discussion with commission staff to fully vet a complex set of several alternatives. As discussed in the letter of Lawson's Landing's lawyer, Peter Prowse, we ask only that you do not take action this week in approving the findings from last November's hearing that might inhibit a reasonable process in the months ahead of thorough analysis, alternatives analysis, given that, one, we are presenting some additional information regarding prior authorized development in Area 6 so that it relates to ESHA, and two, the alternatives we set along with the staff and others will provide intended environmental and lower cost coastal access benefits. This email is on file under the ex partes for this item. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, good. That's sufficient, Chris, in terms of just making sure the email was given into the file?
Yes, but yes, that's sufficient.
And Commissioner Sundberg?
Thank you. I took a phone call from Tom Flynn at 9 a.m. on November 5th, 2018 at my house in McKinleyville, California. And we had an unfortunate echo on the phone, so we didn't. The conversation was very difficult for him to hear. So I could hear fine. He couldn't. So what I got out of that phone call was that there needed to be 350 campsites to make this project work, and that they have also been working diligently with staff to figure out something that will work on this property, and wanted more time to be able to accomplish that. I asked him to send me an email if he wanted me to have more information, and you read the email word for word, so it's the same one. Do I need to read that word for word again? It's the one that's on file?
I think that's sufficient to refer as it was the same.
So that was the extent of the conversation that I had.
Okay, great. All right, just to clarify then, the commissioners who can vote are Amenzada, Groom, Powell, Luevano, Padilla, and me, and Vice Chair Turnbull Sanders. Okay.
That's correct.
And just again, out of caution, why don't we raise our hands if we're in favor of adopting the revised findings? Okay, all eligible commissioners are voting yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That will take a, and just point of clarification, there sounds like there was some confusion on that item, and the applicant with respect to their request for ex parte are really with respect to their next application, which is already in the door, to come up with a different system than was denied by the commission. So I think there was just some confusion about it. And so just so everybody's clear. So in terms of the, that takes us down to number 22, that's the Central Coast Deputy Director's Report. We're reporting two waivers, two immaterial amendments, and one extension. I'm aware of one objection with respect to the Ventana Inn improvements related to electric vehicle charging. That objection generally speaks to the process that we have that goes on with Ventana Inn. And I just quickly would observe a few things. So the commission has jurisdiction over Ventana Inn and the coastal permitting there by virtue of the base coastal permit from 1982. The conditions specifically require the commission to retain that authority. So the current process we work with Monterey County is projects go through that are Ventana Inn projects or any other projects in Big Sur that are commission permits and or amendments go through the commission or the county's design review process and their land use advisory committee process. Which happened in this case, and that's our general process. So they got those approvals, and the county acts as the lead CEQA agency in those actions, and then the commission has the backstop of its functional equivalency. In terms of some of the examples that were cited by the objector, those were cases that went through the commission's process, were noticed properly, were heard, and were decided a long time ago. There are a couple of issues that we're continuing to work with Ventana folks to resolve things that we've seen in terms of landscaping and screening, but those are past projects that are already done, already over with. And then with respect to the observation in the objector's letter about the cease and desist orders, those aren't requiring new trails or improvements at Ventana. They're requiring, with respect to this, they're requiring that the existing requirements of the base coastal permit be adhered to and that those requirements be met. So they're not new requirements per se. There's been some confusion on that point. So with that, we're recommending approval of the DD's report, including the Ventana item.
Okay. Any ex partes? Okay. Any objection to unanimous concurrence on the Deputy Director's report? Commissioner Howell, do you have?
Just a quick comment.
Certainly.
I think Director Carl is handling Ventana in well, and I don't know if I would have voted to approve the Los Osos house if it was in front of us today.
Okay. Would you like to? Okay, good. Any objection to the Deputy Director's report? Seeing no objection, we concur with it.
So that then brings us down to item 24A. This is a City of Bismo Beach LCP amendment that refines their accessory dwelling unit LCP requirements, including in response to recent state ADU law. We don't see any significant coastal resource issues here, and we've identified it for minor LCP amendment processing. So we're looking for your concurrence on that. It's not a motion and a vote. It's just concurrence.
Okay. Any ex partes? No. Any unwillingness to concur? Seeing none, we concur.
And that means that the last item of the day, you heard earlier, 25A was postponed. So unless Jack has something.
No.
That's it.
Did we decide we needed a closed session or not?
No, we do not need to do a closed session today.
All right. Madam Chair, then we'll see everyone tomorrow morning.
There is lunch back there if anyone's interested.